Welcome to the speaker series entitled The Dynamics of Change, brought to you by Coaches Rising. The aim of this series is to explore what conditions really facilitate lasting and embodied personal growth and transformation. And we're hoping to do this from two perspectives, one being what you might call an internal perspective, exploring the moments of change and transformation in our lives and our speakers' lives, and the other is more external, exploring the conditions, approaches, or methodologies our speakers have found to be the most effective when facilitating transformation in others. And as coaches, consultants, or change agents, in some way we're all focused on facilitating growth or change. But as we know, that can be often difficult. So we're really excited about some of the answers that might emerge to assist you in making that process a little bit easier. For those of you who don't know, my name's Joel, and I'm really delighted to be joined in the studio again by Laurens. How are you doing, Laurens?
It's good to be here with you again, and we are enjoying a beautiful day in Amsterdam, and it's great to be on the line with Joanne and Laura.
Yeah, that's right. So, I'm really delighted to be joined on the line by today's speakers. They're people who I think are just out there at the leading edge of coaching at the moment, pushing boundaries, and also delightful people. So, Joanne and Laura, how are you doing?
Great. We're doing fabulous. Great. You know, it might be beautiful in Amsterdam, but we've got lots of snow here in Ottawa, Canada.
That's right. So you're based in Ottawa, are you?
Yeah, the nation's capital. We're right actually in the middle of our winter festival, so we have lots of outdoor ice sculptures and all kinds of interesting treats that our students get to try when they come here and study with us. And, of course, we have the longest skating rink in the world, so it's in full operation right now with people skating to work every day.
Wow, okay. That's cool. I mean, in Amsterdam we have a lot of bicycles, but skating to work sounds really cool.
I remember the first time we came to Amsterdam, I'd never seen so many bicycles.
Yeah. It is a shock, and especially you see the tourists, and they're kind of like trying to cross the bicycle lanes, and they don't know which way to look, and they, you know, bicycles are trying to run them over. It's quite amusing. Well, I'll just introduce you a little bit more, you two, and then we'll just dive straight into the questions. So, Joanne Hunt and Laura Devine are co-founders of Integral Coaching Canada, and they're the lead developers of that school's rigorous and powerful ICF-accredited Integral Coaching Certification Program. They've extensively studied adult development theories, integral theory, and martial arts to build an embodied approach to understanding change, enabling change to take root and manifesting change in a sustainable way using a methodology that is whole and complete. It's really growing at the moment, and Integral Coaching Canada is the global coaching partner of Ken Wilber's Integral Institute. Their programs are they're taught in Canada, the USA, and Europe, and there's a work that's affected both myself and Laurens's coaching, which is the Journal of Integral Theory and Practice that came out in spring 2009, and the entire issue is dedicated to their groundbreaking work. So it's a real honor to have you on the line, and I'm really excited to see what will emerge from today's call. And I just wanted to start by asking you kind of how you came to be doing this kind of work.
Well, it's actually very interesting, similar to how I believe Joel, you and Laurens met when I were over teaching in Amsterdam. Laura and I actually met as neighbors gardening, which is very strange. You know, Laura had moved to Ottawa, Canada from San Francisco, California, and I actually had also been living in different parts of Canada and had just moved back to Ottawa, and we ended up living five doors down from each other. And at the time, I was in my corporate career, and Laura had actually just left her 15-year corporate career to start her own coaching business. And when we came to meet each other, what was strange is that, you know, Laura had been in the coaching world for about 5 years, and I had been exploring coaching and how to use it internally with my team as an executive in Nortel. And so we both had this very deep interest and involvement in coaching. And Laura actually had, I always kid her because she's a little bit older than I am, about, you know, 10 years on me in terms of deep practice in the coaching field. And what was more interesting, though, is if you were to look in our offices, in our homes, we had all the same books on our bookshelf, everything about, you know, adult development and change management, and we had been part of the total quality management initiatives in our corporate careers. All the same Wilbur Integral Theory books, every Zen Buddhism book you could buy. You know, it was like someone had mirrored our libraries. And then there was her desk and her Zafu and Zabaton for her Zen practice. And I had my desk with my Zafu and Zabaton. So it was like meeting someone in an alternate universe and finding out that they've been exploring very, very similar threads their whole lives. And so within a year of meeting, I left my 15-year corporate career and we started working together. And it was as though from the first minute we stepped into the classroom together. You know, sometimes team teaching can be, you know, difficult as two individuals learn how to teach with each other. Mm-hmm. And with Laura and me, it was as though we'd been doing it forever. And so that's how we came to find each other. And so we, you know, started as friends and then became business partners and then became personally involved. And we're married almost 5 years ago. So we have a lot of ways that our paths have weaved together now as we've both been a nice strong we and a very individuated two strong women, you know, really following their life path. So we met as neighbors.
It was meant to be. That's beautiful. I mean, I know how thrilling it is to meet somebody who just, you know, you resonate with on that level. You know, they've got the same books and you just nourish each other. And it's just a lovely story. So, yeah.
I would add, which was one of the things that we both found ourselves sitting with and longing for was we each had 15 years of corporate experience and we each rose quite high in our corporate careers. So we each had a lot of experience as managers and then leaders and executives and all that goes with that, especially being women, and the challenges that occur in the executive ranks when you are usually quite a minority. And both of us had a real similar desire for not only organizational effectiveness and like business performance and all of that, but we also were interested in the health of an organization and the development of people and the effectiveness of teams and you know, being able to have what you might call really kick-ass organizations that are fun and do well. And, of course, we have a lot of experiences where that was difficult to accomplish, and sometimes we were able to pull it off. And so we both were keen to look at what's our next chapter in our lives where we're contributing to having that excellence occur in some way. And one of the things that we both had both come to decide is that we'd done a lot of large-scale change, and we wanted to actually focus on the individual and make our contribution there. Mm-hmm. And have that rest in larger systems, have that rest in larger initiatives, but that's what we wanted to focus on. And so, hence, I think why we align so well, not just personally, but also in some of our aspirations about what we wanted to contribute to in the world.
Mm. So all those past experiences are kind of a real kind of fuel and fertilizer for the kind of work that you develop together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'd say, too, that, you know, how depending on the person who takes a particular job, you know, you can in an organization have a particular job description, and when one person's in that job, it looks a particular way, and then when that person leaves and the next person comes in, even though it's the same written job description, you know, a year later it looks like a really different job depending on the person that's in that role. And what Laura and I found, both of us were interested in during our corporate careers, was working with each member of our team to ensure that they were developing in ways that really mattered to them, but also had great efficacy as well. So we were very caring and compassionate leaders, but we also wanted people to be manifesting the way that they were capable of manifesting in ways that mattered to them. So we, you know, even though, you know, we didn't develop our school until we left corporate life, I'd say we were already developing the principles of what came to be in our coaching methodology because of what we had done with experimenting for 15 years, well, 30 if you combine both of our careers, in trying to develop members of our team, because as leaders, that's ultimately what we were interested in every single job we took, was how to really enable our teams to excel. So our experience in kind of building the school, although we're often known for, being really great at having taken very complex theories and brought them into application, what's very interesting is that we came out of 15 years of kind of our feet on the ground, trying things with human beings, day to day, in systems, for a very long time, and actually seeing where the theory and the real world meet and where they don't. I'd say that although we're known a lot as the kind of the bringing theory into application school, given our rigorous application of adult development work, is it came from a place of deep experience and deep love as well for the people that we were, having the opportunity to lead.
So it's like, it's got to be practical. It's got to create embodied change and, really do it, even though there is this kind of beautiful conceptual framework around it. I wanted to kind of, from there, kind of almost like jump in now to then, like, what have you found through all this experience and creating your own coaching school and methodology since then, and working with all these people that I know you're working with around the world. And I mean, so what is it, what's going on there? What are the core conditions that you found that create lasting change and transformation?
Well, I mean, as you guys know, having also been working in the field of personal and professional growth, there's just a huge amount of success with people working with coaches globally in enabling change. And one of the things that we feel is a little bit different about our work is one of the focuses that we have is on what we call the client's ways of being, or specifically two particular, a current way of being, which is how we're manifesting today, and a new way of being that we're longing for. And many people in the coaching or change or transformation industry tend to be really focused on the future, what the client wants to accomplish in the future, and then what the gap is between now and that future place, and what do we have to do to close that gap. And so in some ways, there's a little bit of a kind of out with the old and in with the new, kind of moving forward to breakthrough objectives, et cetera, et cetera. And we found that there's a huge missing piece in that, which is working with the incredible strength of the client's current way of being, like all the capacities and capabilities and blind spots that they've built in the decades of their lives up until now. And we find that the strength of that current way of being is something that clients don't often get to see. They don't often get to see it objectively. They don't get to see the beautiful capacities that reside in the person right now. Therefore, they don't get to take responsibility for what currently exists and take care of it. And so we actually have what we call an include and transcend method of really working with a human being, and that is that we don't want just out with the old, in with the new, and building the brand new you, et cetera. One, that's exhausting. Two, it's not realistic in that you're always going to bring the old you along with you in some form, and so why don't we get to know him or her and help her to healthily integrate as you transcend into, whatever the new ways are that you're moving towards, of course, in the context of whatever the topic is that the client is working on.
I was just going to add a third piece that's really important in working with a client's current way of being is, and it might sound kind of hokey, but really honoring someone's current way of being. Because if you're really thinking about change, if the message is out with the old, in with the new, the subtext of that is whatever you are now is not good. Mm. And it, this new is going to have you be better and
more improved.
So it's, yeah, it sends the signal of inadequacy, not good, and that in of itself is the first thing that can have change get countervened, because part of us doesn't want to dismiss all of us ourselves, doesn't want to dismiss who we are, and so right then and there, there's a bit of a block to actually pursuing change. So really owning our current way of being and seeing it and honoring it and knowing its limits is a hugely critical component for sustaining change.
Mm. So, I mean, and you guys know that because I know that you've read the journal that you referred to at the beginning in the really lovely introduction. But, you know, how we work with that is our clients are able to work with a current way metaphor that kind of stands for their way of moving in the world, and then a new way metaphor. So we almost hold it as like you hold in your left hand my current way or my way of being up until now, and in my right hand my new way or what I'm longing to manifest. And how do we work with and include and transcend approach so that you can healthily integrate aspects of your current way as you move into this new way of being, and you work with the unhealthy aspects or the parts of your current way of being that aren't serving you now, given, you know, whatever longings and dreams you have for the moment. And the interesting thing is working with those two together, current way metaphor and a new way metaphor, allows you to look at yourself in a new way. If you just work with your current way of being, then all you're really working with is using my current muscles to analyze, this is good, this is not good, here's what I have to change, here's what I have to resist, I have to stop doing more of this, versus if you have a new way as well, it's like you can view your current way of manifesting in the world through new eyes, almost as though climbing a ladder. Your current way is on one rung, and you climb to the next rung of the ladder, which is your new way, and you can actually then look at the rung below you, your current way, through a higher, wider perspective. And so you start working actually more compassionately and skillfully right away with your current way of being. It's like people are often surprised at how quickly change occurs using this method. It's almost as though we've given people tools to actually quickly start addressing current manifestation through new eyes. Does that make sense, or is it sounding a bit theoretical?
Yeah. No, I it's making sense to me, and I guess like the questions I have, yeah, is like maybe like what could you give us an example? What does a current way of being and new way of being look like? You know, what are the what kind of metaphors do you use? And then I guess also, yeah, I've got another question, but I'll keep it simple. So yeah.
Well, I'll give you an example. This is an example that I talked about a little bit in the journal. Is I had a client, a very senior executive, who was going to be retiring from his corporation and was seen as a bit aggressive, and he wanted to work on becoming a more democratic leader. And so I was hired to work with him, and the metaphors that we used for him was his current way of being, which was the way of the alpha wolf. And if you can bring an alpha wolf to mind, you can think of all the really incredible attributes that they have. Usually they're the old wolf. They have a lot of wisdom. They're the ones that never sleep. They're high on the ridge, always having an eye out for danger for the company. This gentleman was that for his company, was kind of the guy who always made sure that the company was not at risk. And, you know, could be seen as a bit of maybe negative because he was always the one who was aware of all the danger, all the battle scars, all the young wolves taking shots at him, ready to have his position, you know, ready for him to fall so that they could move into his slot. And he was just really finding that the alpha wolf had served him very well in getting to that position, but it's not how he wanted to spend the last 2 years in his corporate career. He actually wanted to develop a new way of being. He said, you know, people don't even know who I am in this company. And so the new way of being metaphor that he worked with was called the legacy athlete, someone who is still, you know, playing the sport, but they are the older athlete. They're the ones that don't move around as much on the ice. You know, I'll use a hockey metaphor since I'm Canadian. But they always are in the right place with the minimal amount of effort. They enable all the young players to score. They have a legacy that they leave behind. And so when we start actually holding that in our left and right hand, you can feel the different muscles and capabilities and capacities that exist in an alpha wolf. And you can feel, oh, my God, that would be like a very different set of muscles if they would actually reside in a legacy athlete. How do we build that? You know, how would we build that with a client? Well, what's so amazing for this gentleman is that he could actually hold those two metaphors and actually almost see them, like we would say, as objects. Oh,
yeah.
There I am being an alpha wolf, or there I am being a legacy athlete. And how do I start being able to discern when am I bringing forward which muscle?
Yeah.
So for that particular gentleman, you know, we worked with that, those metaphors, building the muscles to move his transformation from alpha wolf to legacy athlete over time, you know, including all of the amazing capacities that lived within him as the alpha wolf, but transmuting them into how are they going to show up now as a legacy athlete. You know, and over a course of my time with him, you know, by the time he retired, he sent me the letters that people wrote to him. And you could see the legacy athlete all over those letters as they acknowledged how they experienced him in the year and a half, 2 years before he retired. But for him, it also enabled him to see himself more clearly and with less heat or judgment. Like he could walk out of a meeting and rather than saying, oh, man, I was such a jerk, he could walk out of the meeting and say, oh, the alpha wolf was showing up. So which aspects of me, which aspects of the alpha wolf were showing up? And right away he has greater discernment versus, oh, I was such a jerk. And so it ends up, you know, using the metaphors and working with current way and new way, becoming something that's immediately accessible to a client. Like they can actually, you know, as we talked about at the beginning of this call, we're interested in things that are very practical where change actually occurs and is sustained. Somehow, intuitively, this all makes sense to clients. You know,
yeah.
They can actually hold it right away and start working with it right away. And then, you know, we call our integral coaches muscle builders, that basically it's their job over time to figure out the step-by-step, integral, embodied way of building muscle so that that client is left sustainably carrying out legacy athlete. And, of course, as you know, change over time. In moments when, you know, he can experience alpha wolf arising, he can go, oh, there it is, and actively attend to it and have it diminish as he brings forward the legacy athlete without ever kind of excluding the strength of the alpha wolf.
Yeah.
So does that help?
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, I really get the sense of how inspired and alive this must be for the clients to be presented with a current way and a new way, and how you know, it's not a kind of dry technical kind of conceptual thing. It's like really alive and almost appealing to the, you know, the full spectrum of that person, their unconscious, their conscious, and, you know, and how it creates that kind of self-awareness and
exactly.
Kind of,
you know, I would add, similar to what Laura said at the beginning around, you know, just being with, honoring a client's current way, or we'd say their what is, that there's nothing wrong with that. Nearly always when our coaches share the metaphor of a client's current way and really lay out, you know, that metaphor in deep detail, nearly always the client is left in tears because they are so seen.
Yes.
So, like
yes.
This client, yes, he's very inspired by the legacy athlete, and that's definitely the metaphor he wanted to grow into. But, you know, this guy who, you know, tears do not come to his eyes readily, he just sat there with tears in his eyes, feeling so seen, but also profoundly feeling the pain of how he was no longer wanting to live an alpha wolf's life. And yet it wasn't an either or. You know, it was both the incredible beauty of this way of being and the pain that's now, you know, part of it living in him. And so that's also so compelling that we aren't just saying, you know, here's that bad alpha wolf and here's how we're going to get rid of him. Is not the reality of any human being's existence where it's out with the old, in with the new.
So I imagine it opens up this whole new world for a client as they're presented with this old way and this new way, which should seem incredibly compassionate as well, you know, ways to, I guess, begin loosening some of those attachments to the old way and making this transition. And I'm wondering, you mentioned about the new trainees, coaches to aid that journey. I'm just wondering, what kind of things would they do to support that transition?
Well, they take the 5-month apprenticeship module and the 9-month certification module.
He was asking about supporting the client.
Were you asking
I mean, So how would the coaches then begin to support that client on that journey, on the transition? Yeah.
Yeah. So a couple things. One is the coach's role is to actually kind of define and hold a structure for the client, which means having the client kind of really get clear on what they want to work on. So in this case, you know, Joanne's client wanted to, you know, be remembered before he retires and have a legacy. And so the coach's role is to kind of create, help clarify that focus and then hold a structure for moving through time. And the structure, what we mean by that is meeting regularly with the client. There's certain kinds of sequences of working with a client, and rather than, for example, just randomly meeting with the client when the client feels like it and showing up and just chatting on whatever topic they want in the moment.
Just before we kind of get into the process, you know, is to just acknowledge that the metaphor itself that are offered, they're not just invented out of thin air. Like the first process is meeting with the client in what we call an intake conversation, where the coach's job is to actually be able to work with, you know, what's the reality of this particular client. And they ask a lot of questions, as you know, using a lot of tools that we've developed in our program based a lot on Ken Wilber's work in integral theory, but taking tools and actually saying, how do we intimately get to know this client through integral lenses, through our abilities to what we say look at and look as a client, and then in the offer conversation, which is the second conversation, that starts the bringing forward of the metaphors, and it starts kind of the muscle building process. But so I just wanted to say that before
That's great. And so from there, then it's really traveling with the client through a period of time, looking at what are the muscles that need to be built. And so the sequence of conversations with the client are really iterative, and meeting with the client, seeing what they've learned over the last 2 weeks, identifying what specific practices they'll engage in over the next 2 weeks, and the coach actually participates in really designing those in a very kind of artful craft with particular nuances, questions, et cetera, so that the client is not only developing new skills, but it's coupled with some particular skills and awareness. So they learn how to see their current way arising and learn to recognize their new way while they're building new muscles. And so it's a very iterative process. We call it cycles of development. And so the coach is really holding that container, leading them along, helping them see new perspectives as they go, helping design practices, and helping them see progress. Which is something that clients sometimes forget when they're in the middle of so much development. And then lastly, part of the coach's work is to support them completing some development work versus going on for 5 years. We really have a belief that there should be a beginning, middle, and end to a developmental endeavor. And so the other part of the coach's role is to ensure that there's a really good, healthy completion and that it occurs at a time when the client's really ready to go, kind of test their wings with their new embodied capabilities.
Mm, so without kind of getting into all the technical details of it, our embodied integral coaches come out of certification, assuming they pass, with a certification that enables them literally in a very short intake conversation with a client, discern a client's what we call aqual constellation, or the makeup of them in terms of their level of consciousness, various lines of development, emotional, somatic, interpersonal, et cetera, quadrant orientation, which is an integral term, how they work with various energetic states, high energy, low energy, and other state experiences, their predisposition to feminine or masculine development using a gender type structure lens, Enneagram type structure lens. So you basically have six lenses that our students become so embodied in that they can actually have an intake conversation in an hour with a client, discern what a client's kind of mapping is. So that's what we would say looking at the client. But then, which a lot of coaches do, I think looking at the client and using various tools, 360 feedback, Myers-Briggs, et cetera. But the second thing that we have our students do is develop the capacity to look as a client, which is to not just look at them, but to look in, to actually crawl into the skin of your client and look out through their eyes. And that's actually a different kind of level of consciousness competency that can be built. So that you can look as how another person looks at the world. And so the combination of looking at and looking as that we build in our coaches enables them to very quickly develop, as you said, Joel, that kind of compassionate ability to get inside the client, as well as huge efficacy around their competencies in carrying it out. And so then those very same six lenses are used to design the practices and the structure of the coaching program over time so that step-by-step those muscles are built. I think, as you guys may know, Laura is a 15-year Tai Chi practitioner and brought with her to the school this very clean sense of how do you step-by-step build new muscles or new competencies and how do you take a martial arts approach to actually step-by-step building capacities. Like you'd never, in, say, Tai Chi practice, give someone one-legged postures in their first, you know, 6 months of study. And so what do you actually need? And so her, I'll speak about Laura, which, you know, I can do. She has this amazing capacity to kind of start with the end, like the legacy athlete, and look at the alpha wolf and then say, okay, how do we start backing up, like, the large muscle groups to the smaller muscles, and then how do we actually build that? And then she took that from her Tai Chi practice and translated that into our integral coaching methodology to say, okay, how do we make muscle builders? How do we build, you know, so like we often say our integral coaches work with clients and their job is to build the client's new way as an include and transcend move with the client. And Laura and I hold our jobs as how do we build muscle builders who can do that? And so it's actually been a lot of years of fine-tuning how do you build muscles. I think building off what we said in our careers as executives, but also then how do you do that with human beings so that they can actually design practices that really kick ass, you know, from the minute a client gets to start engaging in them. And the client isn't just doing the practice, but they're given some real instruction around how to use one of those metaphors through which to engage in the practice, which actually gives the client way more juice and a lot of interesting nuances, you know, versus just, you know, because you think about giving somebody a practice of, you know, walk at half speed, you know, because they need to work on slowing down. You think, okay, now how would I build that practice if I was working with the alpha wolf? And now the practice takes on some interesting twists and turns Or how do I work with that as I'm building the legacy athlete? And so it changes the coach's language, changes the nuance of the practice design, and it becomes more intimate and actually more powerful very quickly.
Beautiful. I mean, I just feel like there's so many threads I could follow here.
Yes.
Good luck, Joel. I want to ask about that. Oh, no, I want to ask about that. So maybe we're going to have to schedule this now for the next 4 hours. So.
Actually, we'll just come over, we'll order in some drinks, and
exactly,
we'll just sit around the table and record the whole thing.
Make yourself comfortable, ladies and gentlemen. okay, I've got some questions stored in my head, so I'll put those back there and I'll try and bring them later on. What I wanted to ask you was, I mean, talking about this desire for change, something we've been trying to ask our speakers is, you know, okay, we're talking about change, transformation, change, you know, the dynamics of change, but we wanted to stop and say, you know, how do we know that comes from a healthy place? And maybe you could speak also about the relationship between change and self-acceptance.
Mm-hmm. That's, you know, by the way, I think that's a really great question to be asking in our larger space, because one of the things, I'll answer your question, but I just want to make this comment first, is one of the things that we've noticed is that if we don't watch it, there can be kind of development burnout or the pursuit of change without really questioning why am I pursuing it. So it's a great question to have in the space. The way that we kind of hold change is a couple things. One is we see change and self-acceptance coupled versus separate, or change will allow me to accept myself, et cetera, et cetera. Because the premise that we operate from is one of something like this, that, you know, we're perfect the way we are, and we want to change a few things. And so that sense of really really knowing and owning who we are and realizing that sometimes there's some things we want to change. And our sense about what's the stimulus for change, and one of the things that we see is that, you know, the call of Eros is always already here, that change is always occurring. It's always calling for some form of evolution. And the question is, what are we awake to, and how are we discerning about it? And so our feeling is what can really help is that we really own our what is and get tuned into what's calling. And then the third is to tune into, and what's right timing? What's right timing?
Can I add something to that?
Yeah.
I totally agree with that, you know, people can often see change and self-acceptance as being almost diametrically opposed, like we have to do one or the other. And, you know, in our minds, given Eros is always already occurring, is change is already occurring every day. You know, every conversation I'm in, this conversation that the four of us are in, when I step outside, when I watch the news of things in Egypt, you know, whatever's occurring is changing me already. And so one of the things is really accepting that. You know, so that's where we say change and acceptance actually can go hand in hand, since change is always already occurring. So then how do I become more awake to how I want to be and how things are changing and what change I want to initiate? And I think if we are coming at it from just a place of, you know, development at all costs, because higher is better, then I think we're going to leave some unhealthy aspects of ourselves unintegrated. And, you know, so to, you know, really look at change is really hard and in some ways, and it's really easy in other ways, depending on, you know, how I'm doing. The other is that people often have great kind of what we would call aha moments or insights that have them kind of go, I wonder about that. You know, something that kind of shakes us up. Could be something we read, a particular sentence in a book, something one of our coaches says to us. And we go, that's really interesting. And somehow in our, I think, very kind of cognitive cultures, we think once we've had an insight, it just automatically changes us versus really looking at, and this is where we'd say becoming very awake to how we want to embody insights that we have. How do I really want to live given that aha moment or oh shit moment, depending on the moment? How do I really want to embody that? And then how am I gentle with myself while I engage in a change process? Versus, I think the question, which is why I think, as Laura said, is an excellent question, this whole thing for all of us as change agents in the world is that change and self-acceptance actually should be holding hands versus it's one or the other. And so how can we engage in looking at our transformation of ourselves and our clients and our students in ways that include and transcend? Because I think in the include, there's a great deal of compassion and self-acceptance.
Beautiful, yeah. That's a very eloquent answer from both of you. And I'm struck by that kind of idea of aligning with our evolving edge, you know, and how that's something we can, which is very compassionate and it's full of self-acceptance. It's a lovely idea.
And, Joel, I was thinking of an example in my Tai Chi practice, because one of the things that I know I found, and Joanne had some long-term practices as well, is there's such insight that you gain by staying in a practice for a long period of time if it's a healthy, you know, vibrant practice. And one of the things that I really came to understand in my Tai Chi practice, actually after quite some time, so maybe I was a slow learner, but you know, originally when I started practicing Tai Chi, I had this very determined way of being in my practice that I should always be improving. And, you know, any practice in a martial art or any other kind of tradition like that, eventually you finally catch on, there's no end to improving. So it's kind of like, so where exactly am I going to get from this, you know?
But what, there's no end?
For my colleagues and, you know, they're, quote, getting ahead of me, you know. And I'm going, oh, my God, I'm not practicing hard enough and blah, blah, blah. And I remember working with my teacher, whom I love, Lindsay Williams from Berkeley, California. And he said, actually, for a long-term practice to be sustained, you have to practice every day. But what you do and how intensely you practice is depends upon what your body is ready for that day. Which is like, oh, you mean I actually have to listen to my body to decide how long I practice, what I do, how intensely? And he said, yeah, because if you don't, you actually could be doing damage.
So it's like a not negotiable in that you have to practice every day.
But it could be 1 minute,
right?
You know? And to me, that was my lesson in self-acceptance. In other words, I had to really tune into my body and my energy and my heart and my spirit that day and discern what's right in my practice today. And it might be 1 minute. And it might be an hour. And so I have to surrender to that versus this pressed determination that I ought to be able to ratchet myself up every day because, you know, that's how change happens.
And
so
and
that's another way to, another story that might illuminate what we've been saying.
Yeah, I was just about to say it does. It kind of completely matches the same process with our complete development. You know, like not just you know, the kind of more embodied, the more kind of body kind of energetic stuff. Yeah.
Sorry, if I can add to that, meeting yourself where you are versus deciding in advance. You know, like Laura could say, "Oh, I don't feel like practicing today. I'm too tired." But she knows the minimum is 1 minute. And so she goes down to the Tai Chi studio to do her 1 minute. And she actually finds out during that 1 minute, her body actually wants to do 10. And that's a very awake informing versus, I'm too tired to practice today. You know, so she's being informed by something other than just her kind of cognitive assessment of her fatigue or her kind of gross fatigue when actually her subtle energy might, you know, have a longer way to go. And so her ability to meet her what is showing up in her practice. And it was great. A couple of weeks ago, we were teaching certification module, and Laura started doing some Tai Chi exercises with students so that they could actually feel their own either rootedness or lack of rootedness as a somatic experience, and enabling them to actually work with their what is for their particular bodies. Then it was just fascinating, you know, to watch her work with the certification students that way. And, you know, that's, again, an ever-evolving part of as we, you know, keep adding to our program, you know, which isn't something that we wouldn't do. We wouldn't do it with the, say, Module 1 apprenticeship students right away, but in the certification module, they have more access to understanding their own what is as integral coaches.
Mm-hmm. Lovely, lovely. And I have this question also, and it's kind of like, you know, often when I'm working with clients, I really want the process of change to be this kind of linear, clean kind of thing, you know, and then every time I'm kind of I'm distraught because it's this messy process. And so I want you to put me out of my misery, really. Could you talk about this kind of struggle? And I sense that there is value in the struggling. Maybe you could speak into that.
Yeah. We both have a few words to say about that. Actually, our process is really clean, and there's no struggle and no resistance. And if you do it right, it's effortless.
But I'm signing up.
Yeah, exactly. I'm signing up too.
Yeah. So in our way of thinking, resistance is actually a sign that something's cooking.
Mm.
And so two things. One is the precursor for actually working with a client on their resistance is the coach has to be able to sit in that discomfort
mm-hmm. that you're talking about.
That you're talking about.
Yes.
Versus a coach who is not able to do that will want the client to move fast because that clears up the discomfort, right?
For both.
Mm. So it does require sitting in the discomfort, but what you really want to be exploring is resistance is actually evidence that a person's current way of being is being disturbed. That the conversations and the practices are starting to mess with this person's current way of being. And what I mean by that is whatever our current way of being is, we have a particular way of seeing reality, framing any particular situation, how we function in it, and also how we check. We check every moment to see if things are going the way we anticipate them to go. And if they're off, we react, and we react in a couple of ways. And in a coaching program, when someone's engaged in a practice like the Joanne's client and she's got him working on some practice that's now, for example, having him engage in meetings and actually demonstrate interest in other people rather than sitting back as the lone alpha wolf, part of his system is going to freak out because he's used to checking as a lone alpha wolf, which is, am I far enough away from everyone so they can't get me?
And that I'm seeing from a distance.
And that I'm seeing from a distance. So you ask him to then engage in a meeting differently where he's more fully in. His current way of checking, all the lights are flashing going, you know, get out of here, back up. And so he's going to have resistance to that practice because part of his being is telling him, this is different, this is strange. Don't do it. And so in this method, rather than spending time talking about things like, well, I guess you're not committed to this coaching, you need to just do it. Like, can you find some extra will in there, you know, to do it? Or let's rethink the situation so that there's more conditions that might be helpful for you. I mean, those may all have a point, but quite frankly, most of it is getting intimate with the client and saying, let's take a look at how the alpha wolf is scared right now. The mm-hmm. alpha wolf is starting to feel threatened in that meeting. If he doesn't back up and take his seat on the mount, something bad might happen. So let's bring that, let's reveal that, and oh my God, now the client's realizing, oh, that's what's going on in that meeting. It's a facet of the alpha wolf that I hadn't seen.
because even though they're trying to bring forward a different way of being in that particular meeting, their way of checking for how things are going in the meeting are still very alpha wolfy.
And usually unconscious.
Yes.
So that then becomes a major discovery, which then helps the client engage, continue on, and you work with that until you bump into the next thing. So we train our integral coaches to hold resistance as, oh, this is a moment to get intimate. This is a moment to lean into, get curious with the client, and see what's there.
Yes.
And quite frankly, Joel, it can feel like, oh, my God, we're not progressing right now.
Mm-hmm.
But in a weird way, you know, the phrase I use is you're going slow to go fast.
Yes, yes.
So that's what I would say about it.
Right. I guess it's almost like turning on its head. You know, it's like, well, this is a great sign. You know, it's a great sign. We've got you know, some struggle and some you know, resistance. And I'm struck by, you know, it's going deep, isn't it? This kind of approach. It's acknowledging what's really going on in a compassionate way.
So in one way it can feel really deep and profound, and on another way it just feels like really useful. You know, it's just very useful.
Yeah. Yes, I like that.
If it's not useful, we don't do it.
We're not interested.
Yes. So, like, you kind of, in a way, you're describing the process of transformation now, and I'm wondering, like, what happens after some time, you know, a client's begun to relate to this resistance? Maybe they're getting more distance from it, you know, from their mm-hmm. current way of being, and they're beginning to embody more attributes from their new way of being. And, yeah, what's going on there?
You mean at that end point?
As they're moving towards this, living from this new way of being.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's two things. One is the process for that, you know, occurring, and the other is, like, what does that end state look like, you know, when you know you're nearing the end of a coaching program. And, you know, we've described the process a little bit in terms of cycles of development and muscle building, but, you know, if I was to still draw on the alpha wolf metaphor, it's almost like if you imagine, you know, this occurring over time, it's like, the alpha wolf or the client is at a meeting with the executives and he's not even aware he's aggressive at the very beginning, you know, such that it's brought to his attention by his peers and boss, and he's not even aware that he's doing it. So that's like kind of the first stage. The second stage is, you know, he's now aware of it and, you know, he starts now having access through working with one of our integral coaches to the alpha wolf and the legacy athlete. And so then he goes to the next meeting, and same meeting as usual. But about 3 hours later, he looks back on the meeting and says, oh, I can see aspects of the alpha wolf showing up at the meeting. The next level is he's at the meeting, and he realizes as he's leaving the meeting that the alpha wolf was showing up all through that meeting. And then the next stage is he's in the meeting. It's live. He can see the alpha wolf showing up in every word that he's, you know, saying and doing, and there's nothing he can do about it. And then the next stage is he's live in the meeting, and he sees the alpha wolf showing up, and he starts trying new moves of the legacy athlete, and they're a little stumbly and not as graceful and well-informed as the alpha wolf. The next stage is he's in the next meeting, and the alpha wolf is arising in his awareness, and he's trying some other new moves, and the legacy athlete feels like he has more muscles, more choices, more range. And then the next meeting is he sees that the alpha wolf is feeling frustrated, notice that arising, and brings forward the skillful legacy athlete. So that's kind of like how things occur over time in that transformation of watching. It's almost like they're developing the ability to see, it's like seeing the me that's seeing. You know, so I'm seeing, it's like me seeing me, and oh, there I am being this or that, and having that sense of self, who I take myself to be, become object, is what occurs over time. And I would say the transformation occurs by shortening the amount of time between my seeing and my ability to enact a new way live. So initially I never saw it at all. to I saw it hours later, to I saw it when I left the meeting, to during the meeting and there's nothing I can do about it, et cetera, until we start seeing, oh, there she is, there's Alpha Wolf arising, oh, I must be feeling at risk, here's what's going on, what muscles can I bring forward, let me try this as a legacy athlete. Until at some point, the legacy athlete becomes our embodied way, and at some point down the road, it becomes our current way. It's no longer our new way. And then in terms of the end state, you know, of a coaching program.
Yeah, what I would describe at the end state is, you know, if you were to witness the person and kind of look at how they'd function, if we use this client, you would experience him as having kind of more space in how he interacts with you. Like he's got more moves available to him. His presence more noticeably robust. He'll have more room to take more perspectives, not just his but others usually. And there's also a sense of more acceptance to whatever's going on and skill to do something with whatever's going on. So you can feel, I think some of the words I would use is this, there's this kind of widened range of options as well as a kind of expanded presence. So I would say that those are, there's the specifics of each person's outcomes, but those are some of the traits of all clients' outcomes.
Beautiful, yeah. Yeah, I'm struck by that kind of increasing sense of freedom and freedom of choice and increasing perspectives. Yes.
So, freedom and fullness.
Yes. what I want to do is kind of get practical and you know, maybe, you know, we've talked a lot. There's been a lot of stuff come up today and. I'm wondering what practical advice you could maybe impart on our audience assisting them to facilitate change in others.
Yeah, there's a couple things. We could say a lot of things, but you know.
I mean, not that there's not been tons of it already, but I'm looking for
one thing that I would just reiterate that we've talked about already, and so I won't elaborate on it extensively, but develop your ability to both look at and look as.
Yes. Okay.
And most folks already look at really well and have all sorts of really cool tools and ways of working with people. But if they miss looking as, then what ends up happening is that you're kind of imparting your position on others. And so it's a combination of look as and look at allows there to be this sensitivity to another person's world and really meet them where they are and bring then what you're understanding and seeing through looking at. So the combination is very, very powerful. And in that light, what's really important if you're going to work on that is you have to get to know your own biases and you have to get to know your own way so that you can actually tell when you're looking as and looking at. So that's a big piece.
I would add one is for, you know, clients or coaches and people involved in OD work and change initiatives is a couple things. One is to just really leverage what's already here, really leverage what's already healthy and whole in a client. You know, there's a lot of developmental exhaustion, I think, occurring in the world right now, especially for those of us who are deeply interested in evolution and development. And, you know, I think we're all at risk of becoming developmentally wiped out versus also, you know, able to really see what's already here and what's already whole and how am I making sure that I'm taking care of that, taking care of my existing capacities that are extraordinary, and what do I need to do to integrate or more fully integrate a capacity that I have rather than look for the next new capacity. And I think that's really key, you know, as you know, we're really focused on embodiment and integration, is that we tend to move to the next new shiny thing really quickly, and we tend to take our clients there too, versus enabling them to drop even more deeply into whatever is already here that could be more fully filled out, we would say horizontally rather than vertically, that to really fill out the territory of their life It's like I think we've talked about, we had a conversation with Ken Wilber about, you know, vertical development versus, you know, filling out what's already here at wherever you are. And he was laughing, saying, you know, people are so pushing for more and higher and vertical and, you know, higher is better and more capacities is better. And he says, yeah, that's all true and everything, but what are you going to do when you get there? You're going to live your life. Well, you know, start living your life now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there is something about really leveraging what's already here to greater and greater health, and Eros will take care of what's calling us to the next thing.
Well, I just feel so relaxed when you say that, you know, it's like,
and you guys too, I mean, with Coaches Rising and all that you're doing, you're involved in so much, you know, that's so beautiful in terms of supporting coaches in this work, and to actually let yourself rest and ensure that the incredible capacities that you're bringing to the table, you know, don't get burned out, so that, you know, you can keep being of service in really healthy ways, but also that you're able to see your own gorgeous capacities and make sure that you're integrating them as fully as you can.
It's a beautiful invitation, and it feels so sane as well. That's what I like about it.
It's like, I keep telling you, we're like the practical girls.
It's funny, actually, just a little interlude. I kind of learned that lesson a little bit last year. I was working really hard, particularly in the last part of the year, and then I went on a trip to Germany, and I fell on my head in at a friend's house in the middle of the night and ended up in hospital for a few days, and I was really lucky, you know, I was really lucky about how injured I was, you know, I mean, I could have been more seriously injured, but I was struck by that. But first of all, my girlfriend and my friends were not surprised that it happened. They were like, they were like, in a way, they were like, this had to happen, because you weren't listening to your body, you weren't listening to your soul, to your energy, and you've been pushing it, and this, you know, I'm not surprised, and initially I was, you know, I was like, okay, this is a bad thing, you know, what am I going to do about work, or, you know, how am I going to get on with my life, and, you know, of course it turned out to be a beautiful thing, because I had to stop and really slow down. And
And you don't want to wait till you or your clients have hit a moment like that.
Yeah.
No.
You know, so how can we, as, you know, change agents in the world, not just look at change as something that feels like it's fast and forward moving, but that change actually also includes healthy and whole integration of what's already here. And I think it's very overlooked in the coaching profession to actually work with the strength of what's currently here in your current way, and how to, you know, really work with that as your own unique what is for your particular life, which is, you know, as you know, every client is very, very different.
I'm just struck by what you're saying, and how it feels like if you really acknowledge what is here and allow that to be fully, then kind of change starts to happen, you know, it starts to unfold in its own way, you know, without forcing it and hammering it, you know.
That's right.
You sound like you're just a total convert there, Joel.
Oh, well, you know me. I'm a fan, definitely. I mean, that's why you're on this call, so. And then,
I was going to just add one other slice to that is it's okay to take a piece of something and have some progress in it and allow the ripple effect to occur.
Yeah.
Rather than always taking
the whole tomorrow.
It all on, you know? And so it's another dimension of this wider timing that we're just talking about here. And so that's another piece of advice.
Beautiful, beautiful. I wanted to kind of round it up by asking you about, in your own life, kind of significant moments of transformation where you realized that had kind of happened.
I think Laura's already talked about that in terms of her Tai Chi and, you know, she realized the kind of min-maxes of her day. Is there anything to that, or does that feel complete for you?
I think that the one thing that I would add, really, because Tai Chi's been a huge vessel for me around both experiencing transformation and also learning about transformation. And a few years ago, I was just, as I said, you know, practicing really hard, and then I, you know, backed off the way my teacher recommended and followed this min-max thing. And one of the things I realized through doing that was, oh my God, I'm developing at levels that I didn't even intend. My subtle and causal capacities, as well as my kind of growth even in energetic capacities, were exponentially growing. And the way I would know is every year I go to Tai Chi camp, which is a very intense training location that, you know, you have to be invited to be there, and there's people that come there from all over the world, and some people are trying to, you know, push each other around and try and prove that they're better than you. So it's a great dynamic, you know. But you're also really challenged developmentally. And each year I'm just amazed at the transformation I've experienced, and I'm not working at it as hard. And so I just find that astounding. So I think that's the one piece, is the sense of the role that kind of both persistence and faith have, dedication and faith, the role of faith in a practice. I've come to realize that I actually have that now. For a long time, I didn't. So I think that would be the big one for me.
Wonderful.
Beautiful. I don't know what, I mean, I've had so many different transformational moments, but I'd say the biggest, similar to Laura, is in a field of deep practice. And for me, my Zen and writing practice are my biggest long-term informers, but especially my writing practice. And I've been writing pretty much daily since I was 12. And I have all my writings from, you know, my very first poem at 12 that started with, who is God? to this very, you know, day at 49 years old. And I've also been studying over the years with Natalie Goldberg, who's a 30-year Zen practitioner and Zen teacher, or writing teacher, who wrote Writing Down the Bones, and now assists Natalie in her teaching. And for me, writing practice, daily writing practice, and engaging in the structure of writing practice enabled me more and more to work with what is, and to see the true nature of what's often called in Zen and writing practice, the true nature of monkey mind, of mind doing what mind does, which of course you get access to in sitting practice or meditation, but you also get deep access to seeing your mind in action in writing practice. And over the years, engaging in the structure, there's a term called the ink runs clear, and writing does writing, and I get out of the way. And when I actually started to see the reality of being with the what is, of what's wanting to be written, and seeing my ability to just work with what is, was very transformational for me, sitting in a Zendo in Taos, New Mexico, and having that occurring with my own dedicated practice, and then seeing its effects in how it shows up in our school, where we say at some point integral coaching does integral coaching, and the coach's job is to just be aware of that occurring. And I think the moment that I had that realization, my writing changed, my handwriting changed, my voice changed, everything slowed down. And it was a pretty astonishing, as a somatic experience, to experience my own physical writing slowing down. But it's like the ink ran clear. And I think dedicated practice over time really does that.
Mm. Wow, it's another wonderful story. It's a beautiful, heartwarming story. So thanks for
makes
both
of you. Makes me just want to come over to Amsterdam and hang out with you guys.
Hey, I'd love it. You know, you're more than welcome. And
our next module one is being taught in Amsterdam in May, but unfortunately it isn't Laura and me teaching it this time. So
the next time I come, I want to try and ride a bicycle. Try on a quiet side street.
Well, I'm a bit of a master, so I can give you some teachings on that if you like.
There you go. Good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I usually at this point allow Lawrence to ask a question. So if you've got time to carry on for another 5, 10, 15 minutes?
Yeah, we
sure.
can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to say how greatly I've been enjoying this call and also how struck I am by the compassion and at the same time rigor that breathes from your work and also comes through in this call very beautifully.
Oh, thank you.
And one question I have is, what are some of the things that you see emerging in the field of human transformation that most excite you and inspire you?
Oh, well, one of the things that I think is occurring that both I think inspires me and I think we have to be cautious of both, it's never, I think, just really one or the other, is this huge proliferation of sharing of what we're all up to in the world, like things like this Dynamics of Change teleseminar does. You know, or other, I was participating in the Future of Love teleseminar, Integral Spiritual Experience, and all the different things that are being made available to us now globally through the internet and, you know, incredible advances in technology, so that we have access to more than we've ever had access to before around kind of making sense of the world and the human condition. And so that's very inspiring for me, that we've never been at this place before, even with, you know, the massive number of books Laura and I have read over the years, it's still very different. What's happening now is exponential. So I'm very excited that we're sharing what we're all up to and learning from each other and advancing kind of the technologies of human evolution. What's on the flip side, I think as, you know, leaders in the field, you know, we also need to be very mindful about how much we're each taking on and what's our kind of small and therefore large contribution, you know, in our communities, in our homes, with each other. How are we being with each other, I think, is a real opportunity. How are we being with each other on calls like this? You know, is it rigorous and loving? Are we alleviating suffering or are we adding to the suffering? How are we best able to work with this proliferation of information that gives us access to so much about how we can continue to grow together? And if we don't have ways to really sort out how am I integrating that and how am I going to be with people I'm working with and the people I interact with every day, from the waiter in the restaurant to my wife, I think there's some big questions that we have an opportunity to really ponder.
Yeah, I was gonna let me try and add from another angle. You know, one of the things that I see emerging in transformation is that there's no longer just the kind of classical traditions or the kind of classical way of studying things. So whether it's psychology or ecology or
any ology,
there's been a breaking open of alternatives. And so forth. And so what I love is that it's calling for each of us to sort it out. And it's also giving us all an opportunity to have our unique way. So, for example, in a Buddhist tradition, I might draw from certain teachings, but I also might integrate them with some Hindu tradition teachings,
or psychology development,
and so one of the things that I'm actually extremely grateful for from Ken and also others, but Ken for us in particular, the maps he's provided have just been so profound.
Mm-hmm.
bringing tears to both of our eyes at the moment. You know, lots of people think that Ken's just a theoretician or philosopher, map maker, and they don't know his huge heart and the compassion and practice that's gone into how he's wanted to be of service.
Because maps help us know where we are,
as well as
all the potential. And I think it's enabling us to have this, you know, just bursting of ideas and approaches and results and so on and so forth. And by having at least some ways of hanging them together, we can be more in our own driver's seats.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it creates a much healthier balance with teachers and gurus and
students
and all of that. So, and I think it also will cultivate more kind of entrepreneurial initiatives because more and more people are learning how to kind of generate their own kind of unique way while they're in a collective and while they're in group and so on and so forth. So I'm really excited to see about how that's going to go in any direction. That'd be my ad.
Beautiful. I mean, I feel that your work is a very, very important contribution to that, to what you've just described. And I have to say, you know, I'm so grateful to the work of Ken Wilber myself. He, you know, at a time when I was having what I describe as a kind of mini spiritual crisis, a real my sense of identity had been rocked profoundly, and I came across his. That was the first time I came across his work, and it just changed my world. And that kind of clarity that his work provides is profound and had a profound impact on my life. So I feel what you're saying, and he has a massive heart. And I think, you know, because of what you've described, his work and the people who do his work makes it even more important, you know, to create this kind of clarity and these maps. So really beautiful that you've articulated that. So.
Thank you.
And
we feel very fortunate to have known his work and to have developed a relationship with Ken and to have, you know, become his coaching partner and have our work acknowledged at the level that it's been acknowledged is like way beyond what we ever imagined. So that's really beautiful. You know, we wanted to have a true integral approach in methodology, in training architecture, in compassion and rigor, a full integral design from bottom to top, and honor the spirit of embodied integral, which is taking integral theory into the place of application and embodiment, never imagining that someday Mr. Wilber himself would be acknowledging our work the way he has, and we're deeply grateful for that.
Mm. Well, this feels like a beautiful place to kind of end this dialogue, and I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your hearts and your minds that you and the way you brought yourselves to this call. It you know, I really feel that you're living this stuff. You know, you talk about that you want your coaches to embody this work, and I feel that, you know, you do that 100%. So you know, it's been a real delight for me. So thank you
both.
Thanks, Joel, and thanks, Lorenz, and just real acknowledgement for all that the two of you are doing in your partnership to support, you know, how we support the evolution of people. So thank you for inviting us to participate. Mm.
And maybe just you could quickly give us your website address.
Yeah, it's www.integralcoachingcanada.com. And for those of you who are listening from Europe, our next teaching, as I mentioned, we start a Module 1 in Amsterdam in May. So you can check that out on our website and in Berkeley, California in May as well. So we'd love to see any and all of you. And there's also articles and stuff on the website, like when we talked about resistance. There's an article there about that, some of the things that we've talked about. So feel free to use the resources that are on the website as well if they support you.
Great, great stuff. And I'll see you in Amsterdam for some bicycle lessons.
All right.
Or maybe in Ottawa for some skating lessons.
Yeah, we'll trade.
Great. Okay. Well, thanks very much, guys. And
thank you very much.
I hope to see you soon.
Okay. Take care, you guys.
All right.
Bye-bye. Bye.
And, I want to just take a moment to thank everybody that's listening. It's been a delightful call, and I hope you've gained a lot from it. Just to let you know, please let anybody you know who might benefit from these calls, let them know about it and spread the word. And you can, find more about what we're doing at our website, www.coachesrising.com. And who's up next, Lawrence? Might put him on the spot.
Usual
again.
Routine. Next, we have Henry Kimsey House, who may not need an introduction, but he's the founder of the Coaches Training Institute. He designs their curriculum, both for their coach training and leadership programs, and is also the co-author of the industry classic, Coactive Coaching.
Great stuff. He's a bright character. So until then, have a great time. Enjoy yourselves and take care.
Bye-bye.
The moderator has left the conference.